7 games down, 3 games to go in this year's edition of the Big East Big 12 battle. It's been neck and neck. The Big 12 just recently went up in the series. So it's anyone's game between the Big East and the Big 12. Heading into this weekend, I'll recap how we got to the Big 12 now leading this series 4-3. By the way, Big 12 still looking for their first outright series win in this battle between the Big East and the Big 12. So I'll recap, again, the last 7 games plus a couple of other interesting non-conference tilts here on today's edition of the Igloo. By the way, today, no games on the slate across the Big East, but let's just start with a non-conference game that obviously it really didn't have any bearing. Obviously, St. John's is a tune-up before they head to Ames on Sunday. Hosting Long Island, probably one of the 5 worst teams in Division I. St. John's went up big. It was 44-20 at halftime, and they never trailed. Led by as many as 33. By the way, the spread was 33. St. John's wins 95-68. I mean, the defense gave up 48 points in the second half, so, I mean, that's something that they obviously have to improve and got to make it consistent going into this game Sunday at Iowa State. Andre Curbelo, 18 points, 8 boards, 7 assists, 8 of 11 from the field. 16 for Joel Soriano to go along with 10 rebounds. Another double-double for the Yonkers native. 14 each from David Jones. And then off the bench, Rafael Pinzon in his first game back since the Nebraska game. He scores 14 of his own in 18 minutes, 5 of 9 from the floor, 3 for 5 from deep. 12 for Pasha Alexander to go with 4 boards and 8 assists. Omar Stanley in the starting lineup in this game, only 2 points, 4 rebounds. By the way, no Montez Mathis for the Red Storm. 6 points in 9 minutes for Isaiah Niwe. 4 points for the freshman, Mohamed Keita. They got 3 points in 19 minutes from A.J. Storr, just 2 points in 14 minutes from Dylan Adewusu, and then 2 points each from Teresa Traore, and Kobe King. By the way, St. John's, 60% from the field. By the way, free throws were, each team was 40%. 8 for 20 for the Sharks, 4 for 10 for the Johnnies. They didn't really shoot well from deep, 5 of 17 from deep. So inside the arc, they were 38 of 54. That's 75% almost. Not 70%. A valiant guess, they came up short. But anyways, the Sharks were 8 for 24 from deep, 45.6% from the field. They only played 7 in this game, 17 to lead the way from Jacob Johnson, who is 7 of 11 from the field, 3 for 3 from behind the arc, 13 from RJ Green to go with 5 assists, a dozen from Queon Burns to go with 8 rebounds, 5 of 13 from the floor, 2 of 8 from deep, 7 points from Cheek Njai, 6 rebounds as well, and then off the bench, 8 combined bench points, 6 from CJ Delancey, and 2 free throws from Trey Booker. So St. John's 8-0, but the most surprising result that we've seen in the battle so far, how about Marquette not just beating number 6 Baylor, but curb stomping them in Milwaukee? Baylor got the early advantage. I mean, they started off up 7-2, but from there, Marquette just, I tweeted it out. You know, Marquette to Baylor tonight, you know, who wants a good old-fashioned fucking? Marquette, I mean, it's one thing to beat Baylor. It's another to beat them by 26, and they were up 26 at the half. It was 51-25, 96-70, the final. And the biggest lead for the Golden Eagles was 32. Leading the way for Marquette, 24 for Omax Prosper. 9 for 12 from the floor, 3 for 4 from deep, 20 from Cam Jones, 4 for 7 from deep, 6 of 11 from the field. How about 19 off the bench in 19 minutes from David Joplin? 6 of 7 from the field, 3 of 4 from deep. 10 points from Oso Igodaro, 5 for 10 from the field, 7 rebounds. Tyler Kolek, I mean, he only scored 6 points, but 5 boards, 11 assists. 2 points for Stevie Mitchell in 17 minutes, and then back to the bench. Ben Gold had his moments, 7 points, 3 of 4 from the floor, 1 of 2 from deep in 11 minutes. 4 each from Sean Jones and Cam Ross, Chase Ross. This is the second episode in a row on the men's side where I've said Cam instead of Chase. Whatever. I'll get it right, I promise. As for Baylor, LJ Cryer leads the way with 19 points, 7 of 14 from the floor, 3 for 6 from deep, 16 from Adam Flagler, 4 for 7 from deep, 5 of 9 from the field, 6 boards, 5 assists, 12 from Keontae George, the freshman, 5 of 12 from the floor, 1 of 5 from deep, 8 off the bench from Langston Love in 13 minutes. Back to the, they got 8 points from Jalen Bridges and 5 rebounds. Just a free throw from Flo Thamba, and then 3 different players off the bench each had 2 points. So what an upset for Marquette. That's probably their best win. The Big East best arguably win. Arguably the best Big East win. It sounds a lot more grammatically correct. Biggest win for the conference so far in non-conference play. Then Big East went up 2-0 as Butler hands Kansas State their first loss of the season. 76-64 at Hinkle. I mean, they were in control. Up 12 at the break. And that's more than enough to cruise for a win, as they led by as many as 20. Manny Bates, back to his usual ways. 22 points, 10 rebounds, 9 of 11 from the field. All 5 starters in double figures. Chuck Harris with 15 on 5 of 8 shooting. 2 for 3 from deep. 13 from Eric Hunter Jr., who played all 40 minutes. 3 boards, 4 assists. 11 from Simas Lukosius and a dozen from Jaden Taylor. Lukosius was 4 for 9 from the floor, 3 for 7 from deep, 7 assists, and then just 3 combined points from the bench. So a limited bench, but yet Butler still put a hurting on the Wildcats, shooting almost 55% from the field, 40% from downtown at 8 for 20. K-State took as many 3-pointers as Butler did, but only made half of them, half as many as Butler did, 4 for 20 from deep. And they also went they only took 3 free throws the whole game. And credit to Butler, they stayed out of foul trouble, just 9 team fouls combined. 20 points for the Florida transfer, Keontae Johnson, to lead the way. 12 boards, perfect from the field. 9 for 9 from the floor, 2 for 2 from deep. 17 off the bench from Desi Sills. Yep, Desi Sills, the transfer, who was at Arkansas for a year, then he went to Arkansas State. Now at K-State, 8 for 15 from the floor, 1 of 4 from deep in 29 minutes. 13 from Marquise Noel. 8 points from David Ngessen. 4 for 4 from the floor in 25 minutes. And then not really much else. 3 different players each with 2 points. And Naquan Tomlin was held scoreless. So Butler, probably their best win so far. And a couple results, let's see. Providence-TCU. Providence had their moments where they could have, you know, made a run and, you know, silenced the TCU crowd, but they just couldn't. TCU went on their runs in the second half. Providence made it, they tried their best to make it a game, but TCU led by as many as 18 and forced 18 turnovers. As the Horned Frogs win 75-62 to improve to 6-1. All 5 starters for the Horned Frogs in double figures. 16 and 12 rebounds from Eddie Lampkin Jr. A dozen each from Chuck O'Bannon Jr. and Mike Miles. And then 10 each from Emmanuel Miller and Damian Baugh. And then how about 13 off the bench from Micah Peavy. in 24 minutes. The only other player to score for the Horned Frogs, Xavier Cork, with 2 points in 9 minutes. Even 50% from the field and from three for the Horned Frogs. As for Providence, they really struggled from deep. Just 4 of 18, 22%. Inside the arc, I mean, they were a little bit better. 18 of 35, that's over 50%. But leading the way, 17 each from Bryce Hopkins and Devin Carter. They got 13, though, off the bench from Jaden Pierre. 5 for 10 from the floor, 2 of 4 from deep, 5 rebounds. The freshman tried to give him a boost. Let's see. Ed Croswell, 7 points on 3 of 4 shooting. 2 points each only from Clifton Moore and Jared Bynum. Noah Locke came off the bench in this game and was held scoreless in 10 minutes. Rafael Castro, 4 points in 21 minutes, 7 rebounds off the bench for the freshman. So Providence falls to 5-3, TCU 6-1, and then this game was just weird. Georgetown, Texas Tech. Texas Tech started real. I mean, they started putting a hurting on Georgetown towards the end of the first half. They went up 15 at the break, and their biggest lead was 23. And the fight, you want to know what happened when Texas Tech went up 23? It was 60. Wait, hold on. I'm going to find the right. So the biggest lead was 23. I'm trying to find. It was 56-33 with 13:43 to go. And then Georgetown, with the score at 62-43, Georgetown went on an 8-0 run, 18-0 run to make it a 1-point game. But Georgetown, that's the closest they got. They would fold in the final 6 minutes, or almost 6 minutes. Texas Tech ends the game on a 17-4 run, and they pull away for a 14-point win, 79-65. All 5 starters for the Red Raiders in double figures. Seems like a recurring theme for a lot of these teams. Devion Harmon and Jalen Tyson each with 18. Tyson was 7 of 10 from the floor, 4 for 5 from deep. Harmon 6 for 14. Daniel Bacho with 15 points, 13 rebounds, 7 of 9 from the floor, made his only 3-point attempt of the game. 11 for Kevin O'Banner, who kind of struggled. 3 for 7 from the field, 7 rebounds, and then 10 points for Pop Isaacs. 4 for 12 from the floor, 2 for 5 from deep, and then off the bench, they only had 7 points from the bench, 6 of which came from DeMarion Williams, and they also got a free throw from Elijah Fisher. The Red Raiders were just over 50, nearly 51% from the field. They also out-rebounded the Hoyas 41-23. Georgetown, really, the big reason why they stayed in the game was three-point shooting. They made 9 threes compared to 8 for Texas Tech. Lead the way for the Hoyas, 18 points for Brandon Murray. He fouled out, as did Primo Spears. Spears was 5 of 12, Murray 8 for 13 from the field, 2 for 6 from behind the arc. And also, how about 18 and 21 minutes off the bench from Bryson Mozone? 7 of 10 from the floor, 4 for 7 from deep. And then 5 points for Jay Heath, although he was 2 for 8 from the floor, 1 of 4 from deep. 13 minutes, 5 points from Bradley Ezewiro. And then they got a 3 each off the bench from Denver Anglin and Wayne Bristol Jr. By the way, Kudus Wahab and Akuka Cook held scoreless. And by the way, there was a moment where Patrick Ewing, like, he just dipped. He went in the tunnel, just disappeared for a little bit. He came back. I mean, in Georgetown, his team made a hell of a comeback effort, but it comes up short. So they look like they're putting up a bit of a fight. Maybe that they'll take some positives into their game Saturday, which I'll preview a little later on. Xavier, no surprise after falling, you know, losing 2 of 3 times, losing 2 out of 3 in Portland. They come back to Cincinnati and dominate Southeast Louisiana, 95-63. They led 43-19 at the break. Well-balanced scoring effort. 16 to lead the way for Colby Jones. 4 boards, 7 assists, 15 from Sule Boom, 6 of 10 from the field, 2 for 5 from behind the arc. 15 off the bench from Zach Fremantle, 12 boards, 5 assists. So Sean Miller trying something a little bit different, going with a four-guard lineup as Desmond Claude moves into the starting lineup with Kunkel still out. And trying to look around for other stuff. Cam Kraft in 17 minutes, 11 points, 4 for 7 from the floor, 3 for 5 from deep. 9 points in 17 minutes from Jerome Hunter. 7 in 13 minutes from Deontay Miles. Cesar Edwards scored 6 points in just 6 minutes. In only his second game of the season, the first one since opening night. And then back to the starters. 5 points for Kiki Tandy in 19 minutes. Desmond Claude, 3 points all from the charity stripe in 28 minutes. 4 boards, 6 assists. Jack Nungy, bit of a step back. 6 points, 7 boards on 3 of 5 shooting. 18 minutes, I mean, he didn't really need to play that much anyway. Xavier, 46-27 edge on the glass. Shot nearly 54% from the field. And they hold Southeast Louisiana to 36% from the field and actually a better 3-point percentage, nearly 37% from deep. 16 points to lead the way for Matthew Strange. 4 for 5 from the floor, all from deep. And ironically enough, 4 for 5 from the free throw line. They got 15 from Boogie Anderson, 11 from Roscoe Eastmond, 4 for 7 from the floor, 2 for 2 from deep, 7 off the bench from Christian Agnew, 4 in 18 minutes from Nick Caldwell, and then the other 3 starters had 3 points each, which were Roger McFarlane, Dante Houston, and an absolute unit in the form of freshman center Brody Raubery. And Raubery with 7 rebounds. 6'11", 290, by the way. So Xavier with a bounce-back win. And then in an absolute gonk show of a basketball game, DePaul and Samford go to overtime, tied at 89, and DePaul wins. I mean, hopefully if you bet on this game, God help you. Hopefully you hammer the over, and it went over, again, over 200 points in this game. And DePaul turned it over nearly 20 times, but they hold on to win 103-98 in overtime over Samford. 28 points for Javon Johnson to lead the way. 9 of 13 from the floor, 6 of 8 from deep. And by the way, DePaul made 18 threes in this game and still needed overtime. 18 each from Philmon Gebrewit, Umoja Gibson, and Deshaun Nelson. Gibson, 6 boards, 9 assists. Gebrewit fouled out. And Nelson had 5 boards and 4 assists. 9 off the bench from Zion Cruz. 4 for 5 from the floor, made his only 3-point attempt of the game. 6 each from Errol Penn and Jalen Terry. Terry, 2 for 4 from deep, 2 for 7 from the floor. DePaul was great. I mean, nearly 53% from deep, 18 for 34, and 52.5% from the field at 32 of 61. Samford, 34 for 75 from the field, 45%, 10 for 27 from deep at 37%. 23 points to lead the way from Logan Dye. 16 from Bubba Parham to go with 10 rebounds. By the way, Dye, 7 boards, 10 of 19 from the floor. Parham was just 5 for 16 from the floor and 2 for 7 from deep. A dozen from Jaden Campbell, 4 for 12 from the floor, 2 for 6 from deep. 11 each off the bench from, great name, Achor, and Nathan Johnson. Both those guys were 4 for 5 from the floor and a combined 4 for 5 from behind the arc. And then 6 each from Jermaine Marshall and Quez Glover. 9 off the bench from Jaron Rilley. And 4 free throws from A.J. Staten-McCray. So DePaul, they survive in overtime, in a game where they were really shorthanded. And by the way, now we know Nick Ongenda, he had to get surgery for his injury, and he won't be back for quite a while. At least a month, could be 2. Back to the battle on Thursday. Number 8, UConn. They really started off, and they were dominant in the first half against Oklahoma State. They were up 17 at the break, 48-31, and they closed the first half on a 20-3 run, and their biggest lead was 19, but Oklahoma State, you know, give them credit. They did not roll over like some of the teams that UConn has faced did But also, credit Oklahoma State for not allowing UConn to pull away like they did against a lot of the teams they faced. Oklahoma State, again, they tried as best they could to make it a game. And they actually got down to single digits with 43 seconds left. But UConn wins 74-64, and Jordan Hawkins continues to impress. 26 points, 6 of 13 from the floor, 5 for 9 from deep. Adama Sanogo with 20 points and 6 boards, 7 of 14 from the floor. 11 from Andre Jackson, who was making some superhuman plays as well. 7 boards, 6 assists, 4 for 7 from the floor, 1 of 3 from deep. 9 off the bench from Joey Calcaterra, 2 for 2 from deep. 2 for 6 from the floor, 3 for 4 from the charity stripe. 4 points for Alex Caravan and 6 rebounds. Only 2 points from Tristan Newton. 2 points in 7 minutes from Donovan Klingon from the charity stripe. Neither team shot the ball particularly well, but UConn really protected the basketball. Just 7 turnovers to Oklahoma State 17. Caleb Boone with 15 points to lead the way for the Cowboys. 8 rebounds. 14 points from Avery Anderson. 11 off the bench from the aforementioned Caleb Asbury. 8 points from Bryce Thompson. 7 from John Michael Wright. Musa Cisse fouled out and UConn held him scoreless. He did grab 10 rebounds in 16 minutes, though. And then 7 points off the bench from Tyreek Smith in 18 minutes. 2 points from Chris Harris Jr. in 13 minutes. So UConn 9-0. Oklahoma State down to 5-3. And it, by the way, another really good game in Austin. Top 10 game between number 7 Creighton and number 2 Texas. I mean, it was a tight game for most of it, and then Texas made a big run to pull away, or at least get enough separation in the second half, leading by as many as 11. And Creighton tried as best they could to make it a game. And when I tell you the three-point shooting numbers, if they shot the three ball just even just the slightest bit better, they would have won this game. And they got it down to as low as 3 in the final minute. But Texas wins 72-67 at the Moody Center. 4 different starters in double figures. Marcus Carr with 19-5-5, but tough shooting day. 7 of 20 from the field, 2 of 5 from deep. 15 for Tyrese Hunter. 11 from Timmy Allen. 7 boards, 4 assists, 5 of 10 from the field. Dylan Mitchell, 10 points, 5 of 8 shooting. Off the bench, Christian Bishop, former Creighton Blue Jay, with 6 points on 3 of 6 shooting in 16 minutes. 5 points in 26 minutes from Sir Jabari Rice. And then 4 from Dylan Disu in 16 minutes. Then back to the bench, 2 points from Brock Cunningham. And those 2 free throws were the free throws that ended up icing the game in the final seconds. I mean, both teams sucked shooting the three. Each team only made 4. Texas, 19 attempts, but Creighton, 27 attempts, just 4 makes from deep. Leading the way for the Jays, 20 points, 13 rebounds from Ryan Kalkbrenner. Baylor Shireman had a double-double, 13 points, 11 boards, 4 of 14 from the floor, though, 3 of 13 from deep, and he really only got those threes to fall late in the game. Ryan Nemhard, 17 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, 8 of 16 from the floor, but 0 of 4 from deep. I mean, he had a couple air balls, too. Arthur Kaluma, 13 points, 6 of 12 from the floor, and 1 of 5 from deep. 4 points for Trey Alexander, but all from the free throw line. He was 0 for 8 from the floor, 0 for 2 from deep, 5 boards, 4 assists. 0 bench points. And that's another difference maker. By the way, both teams played really good offense and protected the ball. Creighton committed only 8 turnovers. However, Texas turned it over just 3 times the whole game. I mean, that's impressive. So the final game of Thursday in the nightcap of a doubleheader on ESPN, Seton Hall, number 9 Kansas. By the way, the broadcasters made Seton Hall sound like a goddamn charity case. They called him a mid-major They put them in the same category as like a Southern Utah, as any legit low majors or mid majors that Kansas hosts in their non-conference schedule. Not to mention, like, just the ending is like unforgettable. It's something that these players are going to remember for a long. Like, you really think that they're going to enjoy and think it's unforgettable playing at the Fog when you get your ass kicked? No. And it was a supreme ass kicking. Kansas led by as many as 31. Seton Hall's biggest lead was by a point. And that was in the first, like, what, 3 or 4 minutes? But Kansas, listen, I knew Seton Hall was going to lose by quite a bit. I thought they were going to lose, I'm like, I don't know, 16? Kansas wins by 26, 91-65, six players in double figures, including all five starters. 17 points, 10 boards from Kevin McCullough, 6 of 10 from the floor, 3 for 4 from deep. 15 each from Jalen Wilson and Grady Dick. And Dick sucked in the first half. Oh my God, what am I? I really should have thought that through before I said that. Wilson, anyways, 13 rebounds, 5 of 13 from the floor, 3 for 6 from deep. Grady at 4 for 9 from the floor, 1 for 3 from deep. And he really didn't get going until the second half. Meanwhile, 11 points in just 16 minutes from KJ Adams, 10 points, 7 assists from DeJuan Harris, and 10 off the bench from Ernest Uday in 13 minutes, 4 for 4 from the field, 6 points from Joseph Yesufu in 14 minutes, 5 points from MJ Rice, and then 2 points in 8 minutes from Zubi Ejiofor. Kansas was incredible shooting the ball. Nearly 57% from the floor, 7 of 17 from deep, and they hold Seton Hall to 4 of 19 from three-point land. That's 21%. I mean, Seton Hall was 17 of 29 inside the arc for right around 44%. Kadari Richmond, easily his best game of the year. 17 points, 5 boards, 5 assists, 5 for 9 from the floor. It sucks. Like, you have your best game in a game in which your team just gets blown out. Tyree Samuel was 16 points, 3 boards. Casey Ndefo made his first three of the season in this game. And that was his only shot attempt. 5 points, 4 boards. And, I mean, here's the thing. Seton Hall turned it over 16 times. And 12 of those, Kadari Richmond turned it over 7 times. And Ndefo turned it over 5 times. Alamir Dawes, another tough day shooting. 3 for 11 from the floor, 1 of 6 from deep. 4 points, 5 boards from Femi Odukale. And then to the bench, 16 combined bench points, 5 each from Trey Jackson and Jaquan Sanders. And Sanders only played 2 minutes. So maybe Shaw will think about playing him more. Because he's got a good 3-point shot. He does. This game could have been not as ugly if Dre Davis was available. But he was obviously hurt. Tay Davis, his brother, was 1 for 3 from the floor to finish with only 3 points. And Jameer Harris had 3 points as well. And by the way, 1 for 3 from the free throw line. I mean, the guy looks broken after, the way I characterize it, it's Nick Anderson syndrome. You missed 2 free throws that you know you should make. And then you lose all your confidence, and then you go back to the free throw line, and you can't shoot as well. And from the field, you can't shoot as well. So I think that's what Jameer Harris might be suffering from right now. But yeah, ugly game. As a Seton Hall alum, hated every second of it. And I pray to God that Seton Hall will never play on ESPN until the end of time. Because it's so shitty. Unless you have either Greenberg or Fran Fraschilla on a game, or any, like, John Shambi, maybe Carl Ravitch, that actually respects and gives a shit about the Big East, then I'll watch a Seton Hall game on ESPN. But until then, Jesus Christ, clean up your act and, like, at least show that you're trying not to show a ridiculous amount of bias to a team that has a TV deal with you and just slander a team that doesn't. All right? Anyways, let's talk about the weekend that's outside of the Big East Big 12 battle. Got a couple rivalry games happening that I'll get to in just a second. South Carolina, Georgetown. South Carolina looked really bad in their last game. Like, really bad. George Washington beat them by 24. And South Carolina is 3-4 on the season. They somehow beat Clemson. But you know what? If there's any game Georgetown's going to bounce back and win, I think it's going to be going back home. And given how well they played to just make it a game against Texas Tech, I got the Hoyas beating the Gamecocks at Capital One Arena. Now, Butler, I think this goes without saying, they'll beat Tennessee Tech at home. So, by the way, part of a long day of hoops on FS1. So, South Carolina, Georgetown at noon. Then you got Tennessee Tech against Butler at 2. Over on ESPN Plus at 4, DePaul and Loyola Chicago. Loyola Chicago has looked like a shell of themselves so far this year. They're 3-4. They needed overtime to beat Fairleigh Dickinson. They barely got by UIC on the road. And then lost 4 straight before finally beating Central Arkansas. So, you know, if DePaul wasn't depleted, I'd pick them in this game. But I'm going to go with Loyola Chicago winning a close one over the Blue Demons. I think it's going to end up being a one-possession game. And then, continuing this, it's a quadruple header. West Virginia Xavier's the nightcap at 6:30. But at 4:30, Wisconsin Marquette from the Fiserv Forum. I think Marquette's finally figured it out. I think they beat Wisconsin at home and continue this momentum after throttling Baylor. Now, in another in-state rivalry game, 5 Eastern ESPNU, Providence at Rhode Island at the Ryan Center. I know Providence hasn't played well in their non-conference, but at least they're not URI. The Rams are 2-5, and my God, this team, they stink. I can't sugarcoat it. They stink. Their only wins are against Stony Brook and Illinois State. They've lost to Quinnipiac, Texas State, Tulane, and then they lost at Boston College in their last game. So I think if there's any game for Providence to bounce back and, you know, try to establish some momentum, you know, go on a bit of a winning streak before Big East play starts, I'm going to take the Friars winning on the road. And then the only other game outside of the ones we've already previewed, Sunday, I got Nebraska and Creighton. I mean, listen, if Nebraska got crushed by, let me go back. Nebraska just crossed Boston College. I thought it was vice versa. I don't know why, but Creighton coming off a tough loss against a really good Texas team. I think it's going to be more of the same. More of the same that we've seen from Creighton before that game. They're a top 10 team for a reason, and Creighton's just going to beat the brakes off of Nebraska. That's just how it's going to go. So, that's going to do it for this episode of the Igloo. Women's episode out tomorrow. Again, we got a full slate of games tonight. So I'll have that buffer in between tomorrow to talk about last night's games. I might even alter some picks for Sunday, depending on how tonight's games go. We'll see. But thanks for tuning in. Enjoy your Friday. Catch you tomorrow for another edition of the coolest podcast in college basketball, The Igloo.